CampYell.ca virtual newsroom for this week. It's Marty Thompson and Charlie O'Connor Clark of CampYell.ca. If you're not already subscribed, go ahead and search Canadian Premier League wherever you get your podcasts. If you're watching this on the website, whether you're watching it or listening to it, you can see the runtime is a bit different this week. It's probably a bit longer, eh, Charlie?
Just a little bit, like three times as long as it normally is, but that's fine. We'll explain why.
Yeah. So we had Marvin Okello of the Halifax Wanderers and Pa Madukov, Pacific FC. You probably know Pa as the head coach of PFC. Marvin is heading up the Halifax Wanderers Diversity Committee. Obviously Black History Month this month and quite a bit going on in Halifax with them. They both have some incredible shows. We'll tee them up here later on in the podcast, but they've both got, Pa just talked to Julian de Guzman, which was a fantastic chat that they had on Zoom the other day. And then Marvin's, planning to speak to members of the community out there. And again, we talked about it for an hour, so maybe we'll just get into the headlines and circle back to it. So the big one, I guess, we're recording this on Thursday. Last night, the CONCACAF Champions League draw, Forge or Toronto FC set to take on Club Lyon. Liga MX champions, Charlie, is this the worst possible draw? I guess it is, right?
Yes, like by far it is. Not only does the bracket give you probably the hardest team in the tournament right off the bat, if you somehow win that game, I think if every top seed wins their matches, you're just playing three Mexican teams on the way to the final. So
yeah, because it'll be Monterrey.
Not that we want to look nearly that far ahead, but there's some massive games and some extremely high quality players in some of the opponents that you could be seeing against TFC or maybe even Forge.
Hamilton Forge FC, as they kept saying on the broadcast from CONCACAF. Mm. So yeah, I mean, we don't have the Canadian Championship final date yet. I know everyone is eagerly awaiting that. And MLS just came up with their schedule saying they're starting, I believe, April 17th. And then, obviously the CONCACAF Champions League is happening, I think about 10 days prior, a week and a half. So, who knows? Hopefully we end up getting a Canadian Championship final and then hopefully they go on to play Club Lyon. I want to know what Bobby Smirdiotis' take would be on that, on seeing that one come down the line. Tough draw.
Yeah, he would never say that it's a hard draw. He'd say they're a very quality team, but we're just gonna play our football and see what happens.
Is Bobby on this call?
As he has every time they've taken on a objectively more experienced and probably higher quality team than them, which wouldn't be the first time for Forge, and they've won some of those games, so you never know, right?
And maybe we'll just touch on Forge quickly and some of the re-signings. David Choignier and Johnny Grant this week on Thursday. They've started to flesh out that core, right? We've got Alex Asignoni Johnson on, Tristan Henry, obviously goalkeeper of the year. They've quietly put together a good bit of retention, and we're just expecting, honestly, more of this squad to come back. This is obviously kind of the same. We expect this from Forge, right? We expect this from how this organization has been set up, all the way back. Everyone knows the story. But I mean, maybe it's just surprising to see, all of these players come back. We know that Daniel Crutzen was out on trial, but to keep this core again for another year, I think should just be exciting for Canadian soccer fans, because frankly, CONCACAF League or Champions League, they're going to get another crack at it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a pretty remarkable testament to just how good the environment really is at Forge that all of these players are continuously wanting to stay, because I think every player that they've re-signed in the past couple weeks is coming for their third year mm-hmm. at the club, right? And there aren't a lot of other CPL teams that can... There's probably not all that many clubs that can say that they've got eight guys signed for next year that have been there since day one, right? So winning championships certainly helps. That's probably a lot of the reasoning behind wanting to stay in such a good environment. But I mean, it just speaks to how well things are going for that club. And honestly, having this many guys together and having so much continuity maybe even goes in Forge's favor for that Canadian championship game. Right?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, TFC's got a new coach. Who knows what players might be in or out? I mean, they're looking for a new designated player at the moment, so who knows what that team looks like? Even Bobby, like, I asked him, I guess, about a week and a half ago now, and he was like, yeah, we don't really know how they're going to look tactically, so that he kind of likened it to back when they were trying to scout Municipal Limeño in the CONCACAF League. Like, they didn't really have much tape on that team.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just all about Forge playing Forge's football, right? And I mean, if you don't know how TFC is going to play, who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows?
What else? Because I know you talked to Bobby and Kyle Becker about that game. Obviously, Kyle set to face his former team and the team that drafted him in the MLS Super Draft. But what did they really say out of it? What did you glean from those conversations? Because, you know, we've already had this conversation, frankly, like last summer, even with Bobby, about preparing for the unknown. You know, you're preparing mm-hmm. for the Island Games. You know, you're preparing for a season that you didn't know. Like, what exactly did you glean from that?
Yeah, I think basically the overriding message is that, even though they've obviously never played TFC, Ford has never played an MLS team before, but the situation isn't really all that new to Forge. I mean, they've had massive layoffs before games before. They've had to walk into an elimination game after time off. They've been the massive, massive underdog in games before that they've won. I mean, they beat Olympia last year in the CONCACAF League, a team which probably TFC might also struggle to beat.
Yep.
They beat Tauro on the road this year. Basically, like, Kyle Becker said this a few times. He said, like, we've been the underdogs before. We don't care about being David versus Goliath. Like, we're fine with that. So I really don't think that they're going to be, you know, put off by this matchup or in any way kind of frightened or anything like mm-hmm. that. Like, they definitely are going into this game to win. They're not considering it as like a friendly or a way to give TFC some game time before they go down and play their MLS season or whatever it is. It should actually be a pretty good game.
Yeah, exactly. Part of the preseason. So, Canadian Championship, again, not sure of the date. What we do know of, though, is the She Believes Cup. The Canadian women's national team back in action. Can't believe they were playing March of last year. That seems still seems very far away, but first action.
Centuries ago.
Yeah, yeah. First action for the women's national team, obviously, since the pandemic. First game against the U.S. So pumped for this. Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern time on One Soccer is when the kickoff is there. And again, super happy for our friends at One Soccer to get the rights for that. You know, the squad has already sort of chopped and changed a little bit. You know, we heard Kadisha Buchanan's not going to be in the lineup. But again, it'll be interesting to see, or not coming to camp, rather. You know, staying with the Olympic Lyon. But Sophie Schmidt set to get 200 caps. Our co-worker John Molinaro with a great piece on her there this week. First game under Bev Priestman. I know we kind of don't have much to say just yet. You know, we're going to wait till after, go in depth on the show next week. But your thoughts ahead of this game?
Yeah, I just think it's fascinating that the first game back, the first game under Bev Priestman, just has to be against the U.S.
Right?
Like, how difficult a start can you have? It's going to be awesome, though. I'm really excited. I mean, I know that this Canadian team definitely was pretty frustrated with the way they played the U.S. in the Olympic qualifiers last year.
Mm-hmm.
Because they didn't, I mean, we'll be honest, they didn't look good in that game, right? But this is a really good test. I mean, they kind of know where they are. They know that they've kind of fallen off a little bit. They want to kind of move back up the rankings. They want to be playing these big games against these big teams, and that obviously starts with the United States. So just if nothing else, this will be a really interesting gauge of where exactly they're at. And it'll be good to get this kind of measuring stick a few months before the Olympics, just to kind of test where things are. I think it'll be a really interesting game.
Again, Thursday on One Soccer. Let's switch to some CPL news here. Dominic Satoru, we haven't even covered this, goes to York United. That happened now, also seems like a lifetime ago, and is loaned out to Vasalund's in Sweden, the second tier. He plays in his first game available last weekend. Actually, that game was happening when Manchester City was playing Liverpool. So I had both screens. I had both screens up. And performed quite well. The coach there, there's a bit of a write-up on the York website there. Pretty impressed with how he performed. I mean, maybe just, Charlie, you know, this deal, we talked with Angus McNabb on the website. If you haven't checked that out already, please do. We went in depth, about 45-minute conversation about, you know, everything York United, including this deal. And he obviously had a lot of insight about, you know, this coming together.
Yeah, well, first of all, I think my favorite thing that Angus was trying to hammer home was that he hasn't scouted and signed Dom Zator under the assumption that he's not going to play for York, right? I've seen some of that out there. And is it a possibility that Zator plays really well in Sweden and gets a contract over there, doesn't play for York? Yes, that would be really great for him, right? But, I mean, it's not an expectation. I think if that was the case, he would have just signed over there, right?
Yeah, maybe just to piggyback on that, like when we talked with this with Angus, right? How they announced he moves from a team like Cavalry. You know, I asked him straight up. It's like he's moving from one of the best teams, the team that made the second round last year, to York. Not to disparage York, but they didn't make the second round. So, and they're a team that's completely retooled. And, you know, I think he had good answers for that. It's like, you know, this is about him trying to get into a new environment to test himself. Mm-hmm. In two new environments, you know, essentially, right? And he, like every player in the CPL, is trying to get John Herdman's attention, right? You know, everyone has the aspirations to move on. Every Canadian player, I should say, to move on and play for the national team. And it just, like, from that standpoint, the deal makes a ton of sense. And look, he performed quite well in his first game, you know, against a team from the first tier of Sweden. They won that game, actually. So, you know, I think that's it. I know that I understand some of the people that were, like, confused by it, and that's what we even said. Like, I'd see reaction that went from, you know, why did he do this? Can't believe this is crazy, to, you know, this deal is actually quite smart. So,
yeah, I mean, we were definitely, like, it's not that off base to say we were all surprised by this move, right?
Yeah.
Which, yeah. I mean, it's fair to say, but Angus explained it well to us, so if you haven't heard that, go back and check that out, because he will have a much better explanation for it than I will. But, I mean, we all know what Dom Zator is. He's a really good player. Probably, for me, one of the three best center backs in the league, I think.
Yep.
He's unbelievable on set pieces, which has always been something that York has prized really highly. And it will be really fascinating to see how this York team comes together, because obviously there's so many new players. The squad is so unbelievably rebuilt. But Zator is going to be a really, really big piece of it. And I think that might be something that appealed to him.
We'll have more on Dom Zator this spring as his loan progresses. And I'm sure we're going to get more games to watch in the future. Another player that's on loan that has switched teams in the CPL is Kevin Alleman. I know you wanted to talk about this, Charlie. Switching from FC Edmonton to Valor. I think it's a more important change and more important acquisition than some people within the CPL realize. You know, that Kevin Alleman was probably FC Edmonton's best player at the Island Games. And, you know, one of their creative sparks going forward, one of few. And I know you're sort of high on him. So, you know, why does this move deserve more attention than it got, I suppose?
Yeah. Kevin Alleman's a really good player, man. I looked it up last week, or whenever it was he signed in Valor. he was fourth in the whole CPL in the Island Games in expected goals plus expected assists for players that didn't make the second round, so only played like 6 or 7 games. And I think you could just see that from the way he was playing. Like, he was involved in everything in the attack. He's a really creative player that is definitely something Valor could use. He's a player that's kind of versatile enough to play. He can play on his wing. He can play as an inverted winger. He's really great as a number 10. And obviously, Valor really needed to add some of that flair to their attack after last year, because they were great defensively, but maybe didn't offer as much as they wanted to creatively going forward. And he's, Kevin Alleman kind of fits that bill. He's mm-hmm. he's a good player. And I think we've seen enough from him over the years. He's played at pretty high levels in Costa Rica for a lot of his career as well, right? So I think he's a player that Edmonton might end up being a little sorry to lose. They're obviously going in a different direction. They're maybe going a little younger and so on. But if Valor went into the offseason looking for creative attacking players, then I think Kevin Alleman is one of the best options within the CPL that they could have found.
And on loan in Costa Rica to Guadeloupe, I think he's made 2 appearances mm-hmm. already. So that'll be even more important for Valor to get a player fully fit, hopefully, by the time that the season rolls around. Okay, let's go off to our interview here, Charlie. We just recorded this before we did this segment. Again, talking to Paul Maduka and Marvin Okello from the Halifax Wanderers. I mean, where do you start with this conversation? Because it was, you know, you can hear it in all of our voices. That was an important conversation, right? You know, I know everyone listening to this is going to hear it, but what were your thoughts coming away from that?
It was just really great. It was really powerful. I mean, we've all heard Pa speak on these sorts of things before. I mean, during the Island Games, he spoke to me for about half an hour about racism in North America and all over the world. And I think it sticks out to me that these are conversations that Pa and Marvin want to have with us, right? And they seem to genuinely be, I mean, in many ways, enjoying telling stories, right? To kind of promote just understanding and that sort of thing among people, which is kind of what stands out from what they say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well said. Okay, so before we get into everything, Paul Maduka, continuing a Zoom interview series. He had Julian de Guzman on this week. Go check that out on Pacific FC's channels and on the website. And then the Halifax Wanderers, the diversity committee, led by Marvin, doing some great work already. And he's launched a podcast. I believe it's not on, at least when we're recording, it's not on any podcast services yet. I think it's just on Podbean and on their website. So go ahead and check that out and go check their social feeds for that, because there's a great interview that we talk about in this as a first episode.
For us, it's just educating people so that we all can come together and understand, like, there's no difference between you and I, Marty. You may have a ginger beard and I may not have a hair on my head, but we still can find a common ground. You know?
That's one way of putting it. Yeah. Yeah. I'll take it from there. So, I mean, maybe before we get to Marvin's show, like, I just want to talk about the De Guzman interview where, you know, he talked about being, what did he say, that he was the only black GM in the USL? Is that what he said?
Yeah.
Or it was, yeah. And he was saying, like, you know, he said when he gets the job, he was almost surprised. And then it's like, well, where do I start? Like, who do I talk to? Like that, you know, it maybe I'm not sure if you can speak exactly about that kind of conversation, because as a viewer, you know, I could tell that's kind of what you would want to get, right? You want to get those moments of, you know, putting you in their shoes to understand, like, where do you start?
I mean, it's tough because, like I said, it's not given for us, right? So when I was talking to Julian and I saw Julian and it was on the MLS draft combine, right? Mm-hmm. And I saw him and he's standing and we're talking and we just had prior conversation, hi, because I know his brother. I've heard about him, but him, we never actually sat down and talked. And that time was our time to bond and he's telling me what he's going through. And I'm looking at all the GMs, and which are predominantly white. You know, they have their bond, they've been together for a long time, and then they know each other. But then here come something that is not supposed to be in the position, and you're going to be kind of looked at. So he's taking experience, asking me as a coach what I went through, like going through, but also just trying to figure his way out. And as cruel as it sounds, we're not set up for the success. We don't have that support system behind us. Like for us, it's half a door open. We get a half a chance, and then it's up to us to make it, right? And if we fail, that means the black people or the minority that are coming after us, those doors are going to be closed. While for a white man, he will get chance after chance. So that are the privilege that we talk about. That for us, when we go in the interview, we're already judged by that color. Right. So if it's a Marty Thompson going to interview in a Palmo Duca, the chances are that you will get it. Because just by my name, it's like I am 2-0 down. Right. Mm-hmm. And the perception of being black.
It's a privilege, but it's also like it's a responsibility, you know, because when we're the first to be doing a lot of these things, like Julian, you know, you have a responsibility to do it right, because yeah, if you blow it, it might blow it for other, you know, black people who come after you. So you really, it's a privilege, but also a huge responsibility to make sure that anytime you're the first given to do anything, that, you know, you're doing it right. You're educating yourself and representing the whole community properly.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And that was for me growing up. That was one of the things that my father taught me. And it's a lesson I still carry on. It's like, son, right? You're never going to be equal. You never going to be equal to the white people. Know that and understand it. Because if you're going to go for a job interview, you better be 200% ready. Because if you're 100% ready, the job is going to them. That's the way it is. So you understand it. Right, you're seeing it every day. You're going to school, you're working, open your eyes, learn. Right, so I've always had that teaching. And to Marv's point, for me, I'm in the same category, because in North America, we're 4 black head coaches. MLS history has only had 7 black coaches prior. In Europe, right now, and maybe I can count 1 or 2. One of them is in Holland.
Maybe Seedorf.
Seedorf didn't last long. Mm. Right? Patrick Vieira just lost his job at Nice.
Right.
Yeah.
Yaya Toure actually just got one.
Really? Yaya Toure got one.
Yeah.
Right? 2. So that's 2. Right? How many more? Mm. And we're talking about also qualified black coaches that have their degrees. Sol Campbell, one of England's best defenders, Arsenal player. Mm-hmm. Is he given the same leeway as Steven Gerrard, as a Lampard? No, he's not. He has to go to a lower division.
I mean, look at probably part of the reason why even Henri had to come to the MLS, because he probably wasn't able to get the same opportunities in Europe as other, you know, white legends like Lampards and the Gerrards and these guys, you know.
I respect Arteta, but you want to tell me that Arteta has more experience than Patrick Vieira, who is a more Arsenal legend?
Yeah.
But it's easy, because why I say it is, at the top, there's a Spanish guy. So as a Spanish guy, what are you going to choose? Mm-hmm. Right? So imagine if it was a black guy, then I'm not saying that is going to go, but he will look at all candidates. So if we also have Julian as a GM, right? And he see candidates. He will interview both sides, but he's not going to do it just because. No, people will do it just because now they feel like, oh, we have to. No, do it based upon the quality of the people. Right? If I'm qualified, that means I'm qualified because of my job, not because of my skin color. Right?
Yeah, that's an important one too, because honestly, the worst thing, and it happens a lot, especially here in Nova Scotia. I've been hired to check a box. My first job I ever had was at a movie theater, and I was one of 10 people who was interviewed, and I had no experience. This is like, you know, I'm in grade 10 looking for my first job that will give me experience. And I knew three of the people who were also being interviewed because they went to my school, and they had had jobs before. They were in grade 12 and they were way more experienced than me. And I was one of three people who was hired. And I remember when I got the call, I was like, really? You're hiring me? Like, and you know, when I heard one of my friends didn't get the job, I was like, really? They hired me over you? Like, that's crazy. You know, and 2 months and 29 days into the job, I was let go for no reason. They literally gave me no reason, because as part of the 3 month probation, you don't have to give a reason mm-hmm. when you let somebody go before the 3 months. So after the 3 months, they have to have legal reasons and, you know, documentation to prove why they're letting me go. But I remember that day, like, I was young too, so I didn't understand, but I told my parents what had happened, that they had told me that was my last shift and that I wasn't going to be going back. And they were like, oh my gosh, this, you must have just literally filled their diversity needs that they needed as a company. And that you checked a box and now they don't need you anymore.
They needed to make X amount of hires per year, probably.
Exactly.
But to Marv's point, and that is the thing that we're saying, is like, we are put in a box just to fill, but we are more than that, what sometimes people think we're capable of, right? And that's the part that society is afraid to see. If I'm changing for the better, why should you and Charlie be afraid? Let's say, for say, right? If we sitting here as four people, right? Four human beings sitting here talking, right? But we're talking because of the love of the game. I didn't know who you were, Charlie, until I came to Canada. I didn't know who you were, Marty. I didn't get to know Marv until today. But we're all connected with the ball. So that's why I tell people, our love for the game has nothing to do with color. It's society that sees color. And where we have to change that part. And that's the change that a lot of people don't want to happen, because they feel, oh, if it's a change, I'm losing all my privilege and stuff. But no, we're saying that look at how other people are being treated. So if you treat somebody equal, he might help you get better. And therefore we all grow.
Right? And it's interesting. Even the whole color thing to me is really interesting as somebody who's blue, green, colorblind. You know what I mean? Like, I literally don't see colors. I'm blue, green, colorblind, right? Like, so to me, like, it's the most, like, ridiculous thing for people to be judging people based on color, because, like, I see the sky generally as, like, purple most of the time, right? So, like, what is really color, you know? And for people to be judging others on just a literal appearance that none of us had any say in. You know, Marty, you didn't choose to be Caucasian. Charlie, you didn't choose to be I didn't choose to be black. Ka didn't choose to be black. So, like, it's mind-blowing to me that even in, you know, 2021, that people see color and, you know, judge people based on that. And people of power, too, especially, you know. There's been a lot of bad examples, like, you know, the Tommy Hilfiger situations of the past and whatnot. And it's mind-blowing that somebody who can be a business leader can still have such a backwards and, you know, uneducational way of thinking of things. It's mind-blowing.
So wait, so before we move on, when you look at the New York United kit, what do you see? It's blue and green.
Which kit?
The New York United kit, the one that's striped. Do you know what I'm talking about? Have you seen it?
Yeah. So it's hard to explain, but for me, it's aqua and pink.
Really? That's
the two colors that I see, right? Like, and even like ours and Pacific kits, like, they're essentially backwards in my brain.
Wow, like, that's cool.
I love them. Yeah. I love our black kit. I think our black kit looks nice.
It does. Yeah, I like both our black kits, actually.
I'm in love with our black kits. Like, that black kit that they made is unbelievable.
Agreed. And it was very fitting. Like, it was funny. I was talking to my mom about how fitting it was that in the year of, you know, yeah. George Floyd and the BLM movement, that we all had black kids.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Such a great coincidence. You know?
Yeah. 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 Before we move on, Marvin, because we still have to, you know, pump up your show a little bit and talk about it. Ka, yeah. I just want to ask about, like, you mentioned, you know, how race plays into getting, you know, positions and how that influences that in mm-hmm. the soccer world. The yeah. elephant in the room is that you're one of eight coaches in the CPL that is, you know, is a black man.
Really?
And when, you know, people talk so much about, I know that wasn't an obvious one. I'm just trying to set it up. I'm trying to be Big Ten, Kaj, you know, for people that don't know, you know. But, you know, something that should be noted is, you know, what you did at the Island Games. People talk about it, right? People admire that. And you know, it's a big point of pride, I think, for a lot of people in the CPL that, frankly, there's someone that did that, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, you're one of eight still. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
I get what you're saying. And for me, like I said, my background, a lot of people don't know. I'm the Black Iceman, like they like to call me in Norway. As an 8-year-old, I went to Norway. And Norway, if you think about Norway, in the 80s, beginning 90s, you think about blondes, right? You think about blonde Caucasian. And here comes, and me, I'm not afraid to say it, maybe one of the blackest, and I'm proud to say it. I say I'm black. Like, that's something I'm really proud of. To say when people, I mean, yeah, my mom is like, you one of the darkest in the family. I say, yes, mom, you know, I am. And I'm proud to, and I'm proud of my skin color. You know, for me, I know who I am. So I will never feel, a complex to my skin. I'm proud being the black man, right? So, and the way I set it up is to people is, all right, can you imagine 10 white Caucasian and the darkest man you might ever see walking out on a football field? That was me in the national team. Mm-hmm. That was me, mm-hmm. right? The only first ever black player. But it never resonated in my mind because for me, it's the game I go and play, and I'm playing the game with my brothers, right? So I never thought of that until a couple of years back, and then one of my good friends came to visit us, and we're sitting at the dinner table. And he goes to my wife. He's like, has he talked about it? My wife goes, what? He's like, do you know that this guy paved the way for a lot of foreign players that are coming up in Norway? Because after I left, it's like the national team starting to grow. You know, people are getting more of these foreign players. But even still in Norway, we only have one black man who is in charge as a GM. Still, right? And Norway is a very progressive country. Mm-hmm. But still, we only have one, right? So is Canada. But it's only one. But then let's take it to the down south of the border, right? Where is historically for over 400 years and still counting. But then you see maybe in sports, not in soccer, but not in NFL, but let's say basketball. There were a lot of black head coaches to start with, but also that is getting lesser and lesser, right? So some of the biggest thing I ask myself, I'm asking why? And to my point and to Julian's point, I'm given a chance now, right? Okay, I'm fortunate to know Rob because we have a background playing against each other, you know, battling good fights, you know, but the respect was always there. But knowing Rob was not enough for me. I wanted to be hired because I was the best in doing that, right? Not a friendship. Obviously, it helps. Mm-hmm. But for me, I took this job knowing, all right, I'm here to make a change. I'm here to change perception. Right, that have always been my goal, and it's like, because I'm fortunate to what the game gave me. It gave me 20 years where I could go around, see everything, be in different places in the Middle East, see how people are living. So I've seen different cultures. But I know that, and that's why I embrace every culture. So when I walk into a place, for me, the first thing I'm looking is, okay, how can I make people at ease? Because not everybody is welcoming to take a leader, like to listen to a black leader. That's the way it is. It is just the reality. Like people can say, no, we're not thinking about this, we're progressive. No, it's not. I see it, I lived it. So my motto is, I'm here to make a change, to show the world that we are also capable of things that you may think we're not. Don't put us in a box, right? Don't put Pamuduka in a box. Don't put Marv in a box, because we're more than what the eyes see. Right? We more.
And don't do any favors either. Don't hire somebody as a favor to the black people, or, you know what I mean? Yeah. I hate when that happens, where people are like, it happens all the time with a lot of this support, you know, black owned businesses and minority business. People will literally show up to your business, say, hey man, you know, I really want to support your black owned business, and here's how I'm doing it, you know? And it's like, don't do that. It's like, support it just to support it. Like, and if you're going to hire somebody because they're black, do it because they're the best at their job, not because they're black.
And do it because also you want to see change.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Right? Because you want to see change. Mm-hmm. It's not because people are afraid of change. But we need to change. We're evolving. We're humans. Like, how we lived 400 years ago is not the same. Right? It's not the same when people can, and that's why I use the comparison. I'm like, imagine now, 400 years later, me and Marv come to you guys, Charlie and Marty, put you on a boat, take you to Africa, make you walk in the fields. Change your name, change your history, take over everything. All right, black cops walking around shooting white people. Mm-hmm. That is the unthinkable, right? If a black people protest peacefully, we seen as a mob. People can walk into the Capitol Hill like nothing happened. Open the door, walk in, do whatever you want to like. So are people still understanding it, or people choose not to? Are we still turning the other side, because we all know what is right and wrong? We know, we know. And for us, that's what it is for mob. Me and Marv knows. We knows. Like, we can walk into the room and know that we're the elephant in the room. We know, but that's still not going to stop me from doing my job, because you have a perception. All right, keep that perception for me. You know, I'm like, always just keep your perception, because you will come around back. But it's not my job to change your position. It's my job to show you what we can do, so that you yourself will change it, come back and say, you know what, hey guys, you can do the job.
Definitely. And by leading by example, you know, we really try to align with people like, you know, Marty and Charlie here. You know, it's really important that we have allies that aren't black, you know. Yeah. And it's an statement that's made all too often by especially, no offense, but white males. You know, I'm not the right person to be talking about this. I'm not knowledgeable about this. This hasn't affected me, like, you know. And it's like, no, it's the opposite. It's even more important that, you know, white males speak up and become allies more than not speaking. You know, not speaking doesn't change anything.
He's right, because it's about humanity. Because if me and Marv, we don't know each other right now, but I'm knowing him, right? Just because we've gone through similar experience, and that is for us.
When I don't know about you, but when I see a brother anywheres, you know, I nod, I acknowledge.
Well, it's the same, bro. I try to explain this to people. It's like, I remember I went with a preseason camp. We went to South Africa. And I'm walking with the team, right? And there's a brother coming. And he goes, what's up, brother? And I say, what's up, brother? And my team is like, how can you call him a brother? Like, I'm like, you know what we've gone through. And he see me walking with you guys. He's already proud, because that's not what he's supposed to be. All right? Because of how we've been treated. And that's the part that people seems to forget. It's like, we're not treated equal, even though people say, we're all equal. We not. right? Somehow, some way, I feel to have complex regarding who we are, right? If a black man is passionate, whoa, he's angry, he's intimidated, right? Oh, he's intimidated. If a white man shows his feelings, oh, he's passionate, oh, he's ready to go.
Yeah, a black man tries to speak and he's told to shut up and dribble.
Yeah, no, you're not allowed to speak because, no, you're supposed to be in this little box. Maybe you're a sport athlete or a rapper or singer. Do that. Don't come into politics. Don't try to be anything else. You're supposed to stay in this box. But who said that? We were not put in a box. I didn't put myself in a box. Mark didn't put himself in a box. Society put in a box. And the perception of what we're capable of. So black people is realizing actually what they're capable of. Because right now, that's why I laugh a little bit, right? I don't, there's not one cent in my bone that likes Trump. Right? But when everybody's screaming, I go, all right, y'all screaming Trump is a racist. But what did he provoke? He provoked people to start speaking. He provoked athletes to stand up and show, no, we don't agree with that. And that is the power of athletes. That athletes have the power to make society rethink what we're doing.
It's the Trump card, pun intended.
Exactly. So they can all blame Trump, but he provoked something that made a country stand up and the world stand up and stand to try to make a change. And for me, I'm like, oh, it had to take him to make all of this in 2021 for finally people to realize that this thing has been going on and on and on and on. What, a black man getting shot is nothing. A black man not being allowed to get into a club because of he's wearing a shoe that didn't fit that day, or he's being too black. It's not new for us, mm-hmm. right? Maybe new for somebody else, but it's not new for us. Mm-hmm. Or when you're walking with your girlfriend or your wife, like me, my wife is white, and I always get the looks. Why is she with him? Mm-hmm. Right? It's not new for me.
Maybe well, where new. Did you guys grow up, Charlie and Marty? I'm just curious.
Yeah, I just grew up in Toronto. I mean, not a lot of other places around the world, but obviously it's a city with I'm in the East End right now in the beaches. But obviously, I mean, incredibly diverse city though, right? Like,
yeah,
all sorts of people here. And you meet
growing up, were you surrounded by, you know, a lot of black people, Asian people, like that you dealt with on a day-to-day basis? Or
not until I went to high school, because I went to high school downtown, which was obviously very, very different, a lot more multicultural. But I mean, earlier on, I mean, I was just in the beaches, local schools, and it's pretty white in this neighborhood.
what was your first encounter with a black man?
Mm-hmm. Honestly, it was probably on a soccer field.
Really? What was your thought?
I was playing just like house league soccer, and I think like the first black people I would have met would have been teammates and their parents.
Well, like what age around?
Oh, what age? Probably about like 5, to be honest.
Did you remember feeling any differently or anything?
No, I remember. I mean, just trying to, I like the specific kid I'm thinking of was just a lot better than me at soccer. So I just remember trying to pass to him a lot.
Fair.
I mean, it's a little different from me because I grew up north, a place called Lion's Head. It's north of Owen Sound, which I think I've already told Armin, or not Armin, sorry, yeah, Marvin, and he has no idea. Armin from One Soccer, previous host, also has no idea.
Man, you can see the difference. What's going on here, Charlie? Come on.
No one knows where it is. It's the middle of nowhere. Like, I grew up on a beef farm.
What is it close to that we might know?
Do you know Wyerton Willie, the groundhog? It was just Groundhog Day. It's near Wyerton. See, exactly. It's really tough. Like, let's say 3 hours north of Toronto, or no, well, four. Could be four. And close to, yeah, a place called Tobermory, which is a bit of a tourist place. Anyways. You know Tomori? Okay, fair enough. I had 30. I had 30 kids in my graduating class. None of them were anything other than white. There was a total of 2 black people that were in my high school for my entire, or my school through my entire time there.
So it was like a P12?
Yeah, it was a kindergarten to grade 12. So, you know, I know of two black people, and, you know, there weren't even any indigenous people, because there was a school that was, it's close to, a reserve there, and they had their own separate school. So like, when you say that, like, when was the first time you encountered a black person? For me, that's something that, you know, you, when you grow up, and especially when you move to a place like, you know, like when you move away to school, you know, it's a big adjustment just from that. You know, I can't even really answer that question, because I think about, you know, we would go to Owen Sound, which was the closest city, which actually, you know, has ties to the Underground Railroad as well, where I think it's a myth, but they always said it was at the end of it. So a lot of people just went, because I think you can get land and stuff at the time. So people went as far north as possible, and some of them landed there. And like, I can think of, you know, like there was, we would go play hockey there, and one of the arena managers was black. I remember that. That might have been the first time I had seen a black person. And that's the issue, Pa and Marvin. It was like, you see them, but, you know, like, you see them. You don't interact with them. It was quite literally that, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm not going to defend where I grew up in terms of being the most progressive place in the world. although we did have a black MP for I think about 14 years. So that was
impressive. Hey, you had two. You had two, man. You had two. So take that. You have two.
So no. Are you an MP? Are you a member of parliament?
He's applying soon.
yeah, apparently. But yeah, like that. You know, when you ask a question like that, it kind of puts things into perspective for me, not to make it about myself, but it's just like, yeah, that's, you know, what was the first time? It's like, well, I guess I saw this person in passing, and then maybe for me, it's like when you're a kid, it's like you kind of internalize that completely differently, right? Mm-hmm. Without that.
Yeah. I mean, I'll flip the script too. Like, Pa, what was the first time you saw a white person? Oh.
Bro, that was my mom's supervisor working for Maersk Line in Gambia, mm-hmm. A Danish man.
What age?
I was five.
Five.
Mm-hmm. I was five. My mama picked me up and I went to her work. It was the very first time I ever saw a white man.
For me, I don't remember until I moved to Canada, honestly. You know, I was born in Kenya and lived there until 96 when we moved to Canada. It just happened to also be the year Wenger started at Arsenal. But no, honestly, that's the first time. I don't remember in Kenya ever seeing a white person, or Muzungu, as we call them in Kenya. And, you know, it's funny because I had a similar reaction to you, like, Marty. You know, it's like, you see all these white people all of a sudden, you're like, do I talk to them? Like, do I, you know what I mean? Like, what is this? No, like, it was interesting.
For us was, like you said, because Gambia is in the West Coast and we had tourism. So like in the beach, you will see them and we'll call them Tubab. But you always kept your distance just because of what history was, right? Mm-hmm. And part of Gambia's history was there was the slave trade. Right. So you grew up knowing that, you know, so you knew it was done, but you never knew it because it's just in your back of your mind of that, shit, as a young kid, if I'm in the beach and I don't know, maybe somebody was just going to take me, put me on a boat. You know, you think of this stuff. It just as a kid, because that's what history was. Right. So like you sitting there and later, that was a scare tactics from my uncles and stuff like that for me not to go into the beach. It's like, you never know, somebody might just pick you up on a boat, and stuff like that happen.
I mean, with all, I will add to that though. Without me seeing one, there was a very good relationship with white people. Again, the word Buzungu is commonly used in Kenya. because again of tourism, you know, Kenya is known for the safari and everything. So, you know, we really respected white people. My parents always taught me we had a high regard for white people because they came and they spent their money and they helped our economy, you know, and they really valued our land and our safari and everything. So we had a really good opinion of white people, even though I didn't necessarily meet them or don't remember at least meeting them until I moved to Canada.
Right, sure. But meeting that him, and honestly, like, I was 8 when I was put on a plane to go to Norway, right? And yeah, my first time ever in a plane.
Same.
So that was my second interaction with white persons. And it was fantastic because she took care of me the whole entire flight. She introduced me to apple juice. And that's the reason why I only love apple juice. Minute Maid apple juice until this day. Serious fellas, right?
Shout out Minute Maid.
Minute Maid, yeah.
Wherever you are, Minute Maid, hey, I'm your guy, listen. So she took care of me the entire flight, asked me if everything was right, everything was wrong, guided me to when I jump off the plane. And this is, I remember, Lufthansa. And my dad's friends picked me up in Germany, took me to his house, and he was married with a white woman. So, so I was used to that. And then landing in Norway, seeing my dad and surrounded with the white people where I first lived, but then we moved into a neighborhood where it was multicultural. You know, we had white people, we had the Pakistanis, we had Indian, we had all of that. So that kind of put me a little bit on ease. Like a little bit. I don't know myself if I would have been eased around being in an area where it's just white. I'm honest, because as a kid, you will go like, you know, especially in Norway, that's what I say. Like, you have 10 Caucasian and then a black man walking out on a football field. Like, people are going to start to wonder what is going on here. Mm-hmm. You know, so it would have been the same. But for us, once we see also people that we know may have similar backgrounds, like, let's say, the indigenous people, you will tend to move towards them because you kind of share similar stories and background, right? Because a white and black, we don't have that common background because what history has done. So history has actually divided us rather than bringing us together, you know? So history has divided us. And that's why I say, to Marv's point, it's good that we switched the flip, asking you guys what was your encounter and you guys asking us our encounter, because now we're educating each other and that is drawing each other closer so we understand the society better.
Exactly. You know? We don't just need to want to share one part of the story or the black story. It really has to be both. You know, it's important. Yes.
That's the only way change is going to happen, because it's the same as we're going to ask you guys, like, let's say you see the first time you guys, like, who was your idol growing up? Like, for me, this is the best way sometimes to ask people. Who were your idol? Let's say in the sports. Let's say hockey. Wayne Gretzky.
I was going to say, Charlie, who are you going to say Wayne Gretzky?
No, I was going to say Jerome McGinley, to be honest.
Jerome McGinley? No way.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, no,
since a young age?
Which... Yeah, I think the first Stanley Cup final I really watched was the 2004 one where he was in it against Tampa and he was leading the Flames. So yeah,
Which is maybe an interesting
pick. I'm 24.
Okay, that puts it into context.
Yeah.
You make me look old, man.
he got a baby face.
Baby face lesson.
Yeah, growing up was like 15 years ago.
No, but yeah. Because you think about, like, me and Marv are old, but then you're in a generation where, like I say, you had all now the social medias, you have all of that. We had history. Mm-hmm. And all our history was different to the now history. So now you've given all the tools to see what is going around the world.
Man, I'm young. I don't know what you're talking about. I'm 32. I'm still young, Kyle. Come on now, bro.
You still don't want to give up. Oh, when it's past 30, you're done.
You're right. I'm clinging on, okay? I'm clinging on here.
Oh, I'll keep it there. Right. So if I say Michael Jordan,
yeah,
we all agree that we all have a little bit of Michael Jordan in us. Like, we love, well, like what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And it's not because he's black that we love him. It's because of the sports that he's doing. Right? White people love him because of the sports he's doing, right? So now that's the narrative that for me, that me and Marv is saying, you love us playing the sport, but why don't you love us off the when we're not playing the sports? What is the difference? Like, you love me when I put on my uniform. What is the difference if I take my uniform off? You still gonna be Michael Jordan. I'm still gonna be Pablo Duca. You're still gonna be Mark. You're still gonna be Charlie. You're still gonna be Marley. So what is the difference? We play a role, right? As an athlete, you play a role, but off it, you are like a normal human being. You get 24 hours of your day. Like, you have emotions as a person. You are a family man. You go through things like any other person, you know?
I'm curious what Marty's answer would be to that question as well, actually.
Probably like Daniel Alfredson. Huge
Alfredson, Ottawa. You're Senators fan? That's unfortunate.
Yeah, it is unfortunate.
It was either Daniel Alfredson, or I like to joke about it, the Radic Bonk. Just a second line, not a good.
That's how I feel about Darcy Tucker.
Who though? Who's the name he just dropped up? Something Bonk?
I think Radic Bonk. I think probably because when I was like 10, I was like, that name's amazing. His name's Radic Bonk.
What team did he play for? What did he do?
He played for the Sens. He was like second, third liner. But
who was he?
He's a Czech. He's from the Czech Republic, I think. Yeah.
So are we talking about hockey?
We're talking about hockey.
You're the one who started.
I know, yeah, you have. And you said Wayne Gretzky. It was like, okay, well, you know.
Wayne Gretzky, everybody know. I knew it. Yeah.
That's fair.
He's
a black kid in Norway on the ice. By the way, I could skate a little bit. Here's me, Edmonton Oilers. Wayne Gretzky, number 99. LA Kings, Wayne Gretzky, number 99. You know, and that intrigued me to read about the history. Because I'm honest, I am the type, because I love to know what other athletes were doing. So for me, it was like to get to know all different athletes. So hearing about Wayne Gretzky, Edmonton Oilers, I was like, wow. You know, watch him and see how good he was. It was unbelievable. Because one of my white friends was hockey. And he was the one who even got me into hockey. Right, because me as a black man, I'm like, hey, well, nah, the ice is not for me. No, yeah. bro, you know how it is. Like, I tell this story. I'm like, the first time I landed in Norway, it was snowing, and I'm seeing white things falling down on my hands. The first thing I did, I called my mom. I'm like, Mom, I don't know where am I, but I'm seeing white things falling down and turning into.
Same. It's so funny that you say that, because literally when I landed in Canada, also as an 8-year-old, like it was snowing, and I remember the exact words I said to my mom is, "What is this white sand falling from the sky?"
I'm telling you, bro.
What's your physical reaction? Because I feel like if you're standing like in the airport looking out, like you want to like duck. You know, like I'd be like, if I couldn't imagine being an eight-year-old like running out in the snow for the first time.
I ran out. I was excited. I don't know about you, but I was excited.
Nah.
Older than you expected?
Nah, for me, it was like, nah. This is going to be too cold for me. My first two, three weeks was difficult for my dad. I'm like, hey, it's too dark. Because I came in winter time. I'm like, hey, there's nobody playing. It's too dark. Nah, send me back to Africa. He's like, no. I'm like, mm-mm. And that was it. But then you pick the ball up, you go to school, you pick the ball up, and now the world's open. Right? Now the world's open. Now you're like, all right, okay. Oh, I got a white friend playing here. Oh, I got a Pakistani here. I got a Moroccan here. So you just play it. Right? And that took off everything else. You know, the truly took off everything else. And that's the crazy part. And that's why, like, Mark, like, I am Gambian, but I don't have... My best friends are not even Gambian. One of my best friends is Pakistani, and the other one is Eritrean.
And what was the second one? Sorry?
Eritrea.
Oh, Eritrea. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. From Eritrea. And the third one is a white dude. But if you see us, it's like they could walk literally into my house, and my mom will treat them like their own. Like, my white friend, it was like, he would stay. He would literally go home just to shower and change. But the rest of the day, he's in my house, eating Gambian food. He even learned how to speak Wolof. So by the end of the time, it is like he just spoke the language because he was just so much around us. So for us, we didn't even consider him. That's what I said. We didn't even look at him. He was just one of us. But he just became one of us. And my mom even gave him a Gambian name. And he still goes by it.
That's awesome.
He still goes by it.
Yeah. That's awesome.
So we want to talk about the podcast, Marvin, and specifically the episode that you just put out, the first one. Maybe first off, just give us like a bit of a rundown and a bit of a lowdown on what, you know, what you plan to do with this podcast going forward. You know, it seems like you've got a ton of guests lined up and it's super interesting. It was a super interesting listen. Like, give us a rundown of what this is.
Really, it's summed up. It's continuing the conversation we started with our Zoom calls in 2020. You know, we had a bad incident, and you were on the call when we were speaking about the Indigenous fisherman situation, and you know, we had some racists jump on and, you know, really try to end the conversation and mute the conversation. So the podcast is a way to continue the conversation in a safe space, so that we don't have that happen again to my guests and even to myself. You know, it's hard not to take a lot of that stuff personally. And I was really emotional after that Zoom call, you know. And one of the reasons that I was able to get through it is honestly seeing my mom's name on the list of people that were on the Zoom call. And I don't know if I would have been as strong throughout that call if she wasn't on there. You know, I'm a mama's boy. I always have been. And so this podcast is a way of continuing that conversation, highlighting people in our community. First of all, you know, Black History Month is happening. And as Pa said, it's something I celebrate all year long. But, you know, and where we are, and, you know, this is how it's done. So we're going to really highlight a lot of during Black History Month. It's going to be only Black guests. And then after that, we're going to have, you know, members of our committee being introduced. I'm going to have guests from all walks of life, you know, females, males, athletes, non-athletes, and just really people who are working towards a solution and changing the narrative and making sure that we're not repeating, you know, the mistakes of the past, and educating our fans, educating our staff, educating the league, educating whoever's willing to listen, in the hopes that as it's titled, you know, that we come together for change. So the first episode, really, it made sense to have Missy Searle, who's somebody who's, like I said in the episode, she's like a second mother to me. I've known her son, Chris Searle. We met through soccer. Probably I was like 14 and we played against each other, but he's somebody I remember right off the bat welcomed me, similar to like Pa said, you know, what's up, brother? Like, we didn't know each other, but it was just, what's up, my brother? And we've always had that rapport. And then meeting his mom, she ended up working with my sister. I didn't realize this until recently, but they end up doing some work together. But Nova Scotia is so small. There's all sorts of these parallels. And so she's a super fan, not just for the Wanderers, mm-hmm. but the league. I think they highlighted her at one point last year. She's part of our diversity committee and, you know, really celebrated in terms of her knowledge and being involved in the educational system and making sure that the youth are, you know, being taught the same message. She's somebody who's in year one when we had the team here. If you guys listened to the podcast, she had a lot of the boys over for meals because, again, their family was this. You know, this is, they're very welcoming. So they had Krisnovich and Bona and Zoom and all those guys over for dinner all the time because that's how, you know, we're raised. And not to make it so broad, but most of Africa is like that. You know, we welcome people into our home. So it made sense to start with her. And I was always raised as a guy who has three sisters and is a mama's boy. You know, I'm old school. So it was ladies first, and it had to be a lady first. And for that reason, that's why we anchored with her.
And Charlie and I were just talking about this before we went on. And specifically when Missy talked about being at a Wanderers game and having an incident happen in front of her. Yeah. And the way she described it was, you know, and she even said this, she's like, this is something, you know, that I'm supposed to feel comfortable in, right? This is a place that, you know, I want to make this environment comfortable for me and for, you know, my family. And it's so important that she's on that committee, right? And you're part of that, right? Where you kind of put that into context. You're like, right, they're, you know, like for Missy, it's like, I'm just trying to make an environment that I want to be a part of.
Yeah.
You know,
it's like her second home. She says it all the time. Like the Wanderers grounds is like her second home. And it is like that for many ways. I was actually texting with one of our other super fans, you know, he's known as Blueface Wanderer, but his name is Mark Tyrion. And he was telling me about how he forgot this weekend's, you know, Valentine's weekend. And like, you know, he forgot a couple other things, but he's like, honestly, I remember two things mostly in my mind. And it's what days I work and what day Wanderers play. You know, like, those and it was really funny hearing that, but like there's so many people like that in Halifax who have really grabbed on to the team because of the community feel that we have, you know, and I want to continue that and want to make sure that everybody going to the Wanderers grounds knows that what happened to Missy is not okay, and if something like that ever happens again, we're going to address it very quickly and swiftly, and everybody will have clear instructions on who to reach out to if something like that happens during the time, so that it's not something that's an afterthought, you know, and I'm really proud of Missy for being brave enough to tell us what happened. Cause it's not easy, you know, to talk about a lot of those things. And in our initial Zoom call, when we were talking about Black Lives Matter, you know, when she started speaking about it for the first time, she started crying. You know, because it's an emotional thing. So I really appreciated her, again, her bravery just to be willing to talk to such a large audience and educate people, because unless we have these awkward conversations and share these experiences, there's a lot of people who just don't know and don't understand that even locally here in Halifax at the Wanderers grounds, you know, we have these issues still happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Marvin, you mentioned.
No, go ahead, Charlie.
You mentioned a couple times the committee that you guys have put together over there. Just maybe for people who don't know, do you want to maybe tell us a bit about what you guys do with that and what kinds of initiatives you got going on?
Yeah, for sure. So it's as diverse committee as you can get, it was done on purpose. You know, once I started with Missy and started looking at, you know, how are we going to do this, and I'm like, it's a diversity and inclusion committee. It has to represent that. So how do you represent the diversity and inclusion? It has to be equal. So the goal is to have 5 males, 5 females. Right now we're at 5 males, 4 females, you know? And then within that, I'm a young Black male. There's Dennis Adams, who works for Love Nova Scotia, who's an older Black male from a different generation. There's Missy, who's, you know, a female who's Black. There's Danielle McNally, who works as our lead physio for the Wanderers. She's a white female. You know, there's Jen Montgomery, who's again a white female, but from a different age group. There's Brady Adams, who's First Nations background. There's Greg Gillis, who works for the Human Rights Commission of Nova Scotia. There's and he's a white male. There's, you know, so we're very, very diverse. Admittedly, we tried to be as inclusive as possible with our committee. And, you know, there's also Megan Neves that, you know, she's visibly Caucasian when you see her, but she also has First Nations background as well, right? So really tried to have a balanced committee that represents Nova Scotia and all the diverse people within it. And admittedly, I'm trying to find the last person who's going to be a female who's involved in the hopefully the Special Olympics or has a, you know, an obvious disability, because that's another one that really is important to represent. And I think once we get that, we will be maybe the most diverse committee, you know, I've ever heard of. So, that was all done on purpose, and they all have varying levels of education. You know, Megan has a class now. She teaches here locally in Nova Scotia, community college, that talks about white privilege, you know, and it educates people on how to use that privilege for good, you know. And Brady also, he did his history major at St. Mary's University on Indigenous history, because they allowed him to. And so he's the perfect person when we're trying to have, let's say there's a Wanderers games around, let's say like the North American Indigenous games around the same time. I'll work with Brady to be the one to reach out to the people in the community because he's a member of that community. It doesn't make sense for me as a Black person to be going to their community being like, hey, I'm Marvin of the Wanderers, I'm Black, and I want you to partner with us. It doesn't make sense. It makes sense to have somebody who is a member of that community to go and relay the Wanderers message. And this is, we want to be with you. How can we help? How can we partner with you short term and long term? Because nothing we want to do is as a one-off. We want to make sure that we're laying a foundation that if I was to be gone tomorrow, if, you know, any one of us were to be gone tomorrow, that foundation will still be there and the principles will still be there.
And maybe one final question here, because we've gone pretty long, but you mentioned laying the foundation. And I know I've already got you to answer this question previously, but I find it very fascinating when you sort of talk about, look, like if we can do this because the Wanderers are only 2-3 years old, if we put this in place at the right time, you know, we see it in Western culture right now, right? You talk about the diversity inclusion. A lot of it is trying to break down the stuff that's already been in place for decades, right? Mm-hmm. And you're talking about, why wouldn't we just start with the right foundation? Which I think is, you know, from the Canadian Premier League and for the CPL, it's teams, you know, fans, players, everything. That is such a positive light, right? To sort of suggest that you can start fresh, right?
Yeah, start. What is the saying? Like, start as you mean, or mean to go on, or something like that. I can't remember the exact wording, but before I forget, I missed one of my members, DeRico Simons. You know, he's honestly one of the most important in a lot of ways because he's been fighting, you know, the fight since he was young, you know, growing up in the pubs. We talk about this. He's actually my next episode on the podcast. And we talk about resilience and perseverance, and he embodies that in everything that he does. You know, if you check out his social media, you will see that I can't even tell you all the accolades that he has and all the contributions he's made to Black people in the community. But back to your question, it's important anytime you're starting something that you consider a positive foundation. You know, that word is literal in a lot of ways when you're building a house. You know, you don't build it on sandy ground. You don't build it on firm ground. You build a house on a solid foundation, and then everything that you build after that will work. But if you don't, you know, start on a solid foundation, everything you try to do after that will crumble. So it's important that as a team, as a league, as people, you know, we really start everything with a solid foundation.
Right, and the CPL have a chance now.
Yeah,
for me, exactly. CPL have a chance because the way that the players showed unity in the Island Games, that's something that the league can build up. And the more the league is also open to diversity and listening to the people that went through it, and that will definitely put the league in a different spot. Because Marvis talked about that now is the timing. Now is the timing to set the foundation for all of us. Like, why? It doesn't matter. Now is the foundation to start something right. And when you start something right, people will follow.
Exactly.
Right? Exactly. And also the belief. For me, it's got to be belief, right? It's got to be a true belief that we can make it happen. Well, we're gonna encounter people that don't want to do it. But if we truly believe it, then we must do it. And then do it the right way, like he says, right? And then it will come from the leaders that are willing to put in the hours and time to make sure that the foundation is solid. And we are the people that can help because we went through it. But then people must be open to want to listen and understand what we're trying to say. Because I have a saying that goes, and it's a normal saying, that the biggest failure in communication is people are listening to answer rather than to understand.
So true. So true. Mm-hmm. So true.
So when people understand and have empathy for what that other person is saying, now doors open up. But if you are listening to answer, you're going to keep going down the same road over and over. Right? So that's why for me also I speak about education piece. like education piece is going to be the most important part as well. That you and I or Charlie with the Marty or anybody else, we can sit down and we can be open about it. When you open about it, it's then when you see progress. If not, we're going to be enemy of progress. That's the EPO, right? I call it the EOP. That is the word I like because that's what it is. Like, either we progress and CPL have a great chance. Have a great chance to make a difference. Because Canada as a country is very multicultural in one ways. Right? It's very much cultural in one ways. So if we can drive that now, be the front runner, take it, be the front runner, and build it the way it should build with passionate leaders like Marv, like myself, like you, Charlie, like Matthew, who's at the league as well. These are important. These are important. So when somebody like Matthew is passionate about what is happening, let him lead. Let him lead it.
And Marty, too, of course.
Yeah, and Marty, of course, because you guys are passionate about it. And when you are passionate about it, for me, there's nothing greater than to see people who are passionate about wanting to do something. And that's why I say wherever my support is needed, I will. Because it's not only for me. Like, it's for my daughters. It's for their daughters. It's for maybe your child, Charlie, or Marty. When the time is right for you, Charlie, you still got a long way to go. You know? But those things are important because that's what I say. My legacy, because I don't earn this earth. I'm put here for a reason. Whatever my reason is, what my destiny is for me to find out, do what I need to do, and live it in a better place. That's all I'm here to do. Like I came, I'll use this phrase when people talk. I'm like, guys, listen, money or whatever status doesn't matter. You came to this world naked. You're going back naked. So just make sure that you leave this earth a better place. That's all you need to do. So whoever you can impact, impact those person, and let's drive progress. Let's drive progress as people. Because that's what it is. It's nothing else.
Marvin, Pa, can't thank you enough. Thank you very much for the time. Great way to end it. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you. And Ka, man, you got to hop on my podcast, brother.
Anytime, bro. You don't like me, you don't want to call me. I'm around the corner.
I don't got your number, man. I hope it's in your website. I don't even see your email signature with the email. So hit me up with your number, man.
I'm on the west side.